Chapter 20, in which Beaver builds sandcastles. A quick note. The events of this chapter mostly follow directly on from Chapter 12, in which Feely and Keely are good at running. A refreshed memory of those events may prove useful, but is not precisely necessary. Beaver cannot speak. He used to be angry about it, after the attack, and in the weeks and months that followed. The loss of his voice took his independence, too, and even his family treated him like an invalid, or a deaf man. They forgot, sometimes, that he could still hear and comprehend as well as ever. But Thorne's way, holding on to the anger and resentment, distilling it down into a weapon that can be used against their enemies, is not his way, and Beaver makes his peace with it all, eventually. The lads are the greatest help in that. They no more remember the man he was before the injury than he does, now, and they love him for who he is, not the shadow of the man he used to be. They help him create words for himself, and he speaks again through them at first, and then on his own, and the anger bleeds away between his fingers as they smile, wide and bright and innocent. They grow so fast, like seagrasses on the dunes looking over the water, where Beaver prefers to be. The waves crash and thunder in rhythm, like the noise that ebbs and flows in his head now, and he lets the oceans bear away his fears. When they are small, Feely and Keely come to the sea with him, paddling in cold water until their lips turn blue and their teeth chatter, and Beaver smiles. He sits in the sand and builds a castle, or is it a mountain, and lets the water carry it away, sand slipping between his fingers. But the lads slip away, too. Thorne lets them run free and wild, and what can Beaver say? Thorne would not listen to him even if he had words, and they are not his children. He does his best to help when he is able, and welcomes them when they have come back to him, and does not think they are the closest thing he will ever have to children of his own, because that is not a thought that will do anyone any good. He doesn't have the signs to express it, anyway. They wander the wilds of Scotland, Beaver and Beaufort, and Balin joins them often enough. Beaufort finds them little places to stay, villages where he can take odd jobs and piece together a living with as little thieving as possible. Beaver learns to control his hands again, though it takes years for it all to come back, and busies himself with repairing shoes and old toys and whatever people will bring him, those who are not scared away by the scar on his head that makes him look so wild, or by his silence. They are waiting, more than living, waiting for Thorne to lead them home, or for everything to come crashing down on them once and for all, to stop the running. Beaver steers them toward the coasts whenever he can, the wild Atlantic shores, or the islands, anywhere that the roar of waves can lift him up and bear him away, and where the children will always come back to them, bright and wild in the free salt air. Eventually, he finds a croft on a barren hillside in Waternish, and plants himself, digging roots deeper than advisable. He is immovable, stubborn in his silences, and Balin and Beaufort are mostly pleased to allow it. There are other small crofters nearby, though Beaufort has to travel to the larger towns of Skye to find good work. Beaver grows what he can, and catches fish, and is happy. It is a safe place for the lads, and they come when they can, bringing stories of the cities that have become their natural habitat. But Beaver sees what the others miss, sees the hunger in their eyes for a home that is always the same, and for the wild freedom of the wind and tides, and he brings them down to the water, and watches them become children again. It is only for Thorin that Beaver will leave his quiet place, but he never hesitates when Thorin calls them back. They are called to Edinburgh early one summer, just as the heather is exploding in glorious color on the hills, and so they go. He is glad to see the others, though they are awkward and hesitant with him at first, their fingers stiff and uncertain in the forming of his words. He would tell them to stop, to speak aloud, in the words that he can hear and understand as well as ever. but it is a kindness they try to do him, and Beaver has become a patient man. They fall into small circles very quickly, and Balin is pulled away to offer his thoughts on Thorin's latest plans of attack. Owen fusses about his flat, offering them all what refreshments he can, and Beaufort is spun aside into a wild knot of arms and too long hair and beards, as friends who do not speak often enough attempt to catch up on months of silence. Beaufort would feel awkward, left outside the conversation with his words silenced by a beer and a plate of sandwiches, but he has become used to it. He watches, and listens to all of their conversations, and lets the roar of words rush over him like a wave. If the rest are a wave, rising and falling, then Feely and Keely are the rock that they dash themselves against. Beaufort wonders whether they even know it. All talk stops when the lads burst in, bright and wild and bursting with secrets of their own, and they move around the children, wrapping them in the deep embrace that is the family. But they are children yet, for all their height and independence, and Beaufort knows they are like the fish that swim in the sea but are unaware of the water around them. Their limbs are too long and their spirits too wild for their bodies, and they do not see what surrounds them. Beaufort watches them as they find a corner to huddle together in, hunched over Feely's little computer, throwing words and ideas back and forth in their airy flutter of talk that no one else can follow. Keely is a dark, wriggling bundle of energy, barely keeping himself contained as they work on their secret project. Feely nearly glows with pride and assurance. His hands are quick and sure on the keys, and the lads share a triumphant laugh as they finish their work. When Thorin comes to them, Beaufort puts down the things in his hands, freeing them to speak as best he can, if his words will do any good. The tide shifts, noise bleeding away as the lads explain their plan, and Thorin's anger towers about them in a wave that crushes them without striking a blow. It is brutal, this scuttling of their hopes, and Beaufort slips away to find his cousin, fingers moving urgently. "Bring them home," he signs. His hands are directly in front of Beaufort's face, commanding his attention. "Important. Home."
"Back to Waternash," Beaufort murmurs, unsure.
Beaufort knows the others don't think of it as home, but he has let the mountain slip away from between his fingers, and he nods. He cannot convey tone with his signs, so he must hope his scarred face will carry it for him. The lads need to come home. Beaufort smiles his strange little smile and nods agreement, and goes to find the children before they leave. He comes back in a moment.
"They will come. Give them a few days."
He claps a hand on Beaufort's shoulder, and Beaufort listens to the waves of sound pick up again. Slower, now. But it is more than a few days before they come to Waternash. Beaufort waits for them, building mountains in the sand and letting the tide bear them out, and thinks of how to shape his few, awkward words into something that will help the lads. The days grow longer and longer, until the sun barely sets before it is rising again, and then they come, in the heat of the summer. It's strange, when they come. Beaufort has known them both since they were infants, and has watched the way they grew together, like two trees reaching toward the same sun. Leaves and branches and roots intertwined until there is no separation to be made. Now, Feely marches through the door, nearly letting it slam behind him, and Keely catches it with a muffled grunt of pain or annoyance, and Feely does not turn. His shoulders are tight and hunched, and his fingers are clenched into fists that look painful.
"I expected you weeks ago,"
Beaufort calls cheerfully from the other room, glancing in briefly as he picks up a tricky piece of work at the table.
"Not lost in your way, did you?" "Ask Keely."
Feely spits. The word's a harsh condemnation. Keely just shoots him a look, all anger and bitterness over a deep and terrible fear, and that is how Beaufort knows that Feely is not looking at his brother. Feely doesn't allow Keely to be that frightened. Not ever, and certainly not of him. Something is deeply wrong. Oh, you've arrived, Balin says happily, walking in behind them with his arms laden with purchases from the nearest shop.
Good lads, I'd have brought biscuits if I'd known.
He beams at them, eyes wrinkling up with delight. Keeley's head is down, straggly dark hair hiding his face, and Feely doesn't unwrap himself from the tight knot of his tensed muscles. Balin's smile fades, and he clears his throat awkwardly, moving past them.
Let's go put these things away,
he mumbles. Beaver rolls his eyes, just a little. The unwillingness to speak seems such a luxury now. He nudges Keeley for his attention, then signs.
Problem.
What? Keeley laughs, brittle and far too old, and shakes his head.
No problems here, Uncle Beaver. I'm not the one having a problem.
But his fingers wrap protectively around his right forearm, and Beaver can make out the bulky shape of bandages wrapped around the too scrawny limb. Feely scoffs, nearly making himself choke.
No problem, unless you count doing something monumentally stupid and life-threatening in a desperate attempt to get Thorne's attention as a problem.
Keeley turns red at that, and Beaver sees an aborted kick at Feely's ankle, which he drives into the floor at the last second.
Wasn't like that,
he mutters, and clutches his arm a little closer.
Tell me,
Beaver demands. They don't respond. Feely's arms are crossed now, so tight they're shaking a little, and Keeley is radiating sullen misery from every pore.
I'm off to deliver this,
Beaver announces, putting his head through from the other room, seemingly oblivious to the tension in the air.
Won't be gone more than a few hours.
I'll come with you, Feely declares loudly, and leaves. Keeley gives a sharp little gasp of surprise, quickly stifled, and looks after his brothers retreating back. Beaver is willing to wage money that Feely has never walked away from him like that before. It is a strange, cold undertow. Beaver tries to shape his fingers to ask the questions that plague him, but Keeley slumps into a battered armchair, bringing his knees up and letting his forehead fall to rest against them, and Beaver cannot make himself heard. It doesn't get better from there. The little cottage is full of awkward silences, anger and resentment thick in the air. Feely leaves as often as he can, and wraps himself around his little devices when he cannot.
I still have my work, even out here, he explains reasonably to Balin. The connections aren't good, but there's always something I can be working on.
And it sounds perfectly true and right and reasonable, but Beaver is watching his eyes, and the way they stubbornly don't flick over to glance at Keeley, and the way Feely's jaw is just a little too tightly set, like he's wound to a breaking point. He's 17 and angry, and every inch his uncle, now. He won't talk about it, no matter what questions Beaver asks. He denies that there is a problem, laughs it off with a shrug, and doesn't talk about his little brother, or the bloody bandage on Keeley's arm, or the way they haven't spoken in days. And Keeley is no better. They have laughed for years that they never should have taught Keeley to talk, because ever since he learned, he's never been quiet. But now he is silent, mouth a thin, miserable line. Beaver doesn't know if the weight on his scrawny shoulders is grief or guilt or anger, but he can see the misery plainly in the way Keeley sinks a little lower every time Feely leaves him behind or ignores him for a glowing screen. If it is a punishment, then Beaver is afraid to know what immense crime the lad has committed to deserve it. Beaver grows tired of the silences and the closeness of the house after nearly 2 weeks, and grabs Keeley's arm, hauling him away and down to the shore, where he breathes in deep of the wild sea air, and feels his heart lighten just a little. He sinks down on the sand, feet only inches away from the greedy grasp of the waves, and begins to build something. His hands say nothing, leaving a silence he trusts Keeley to fill.
I didn't mean for it to happen,
Keeley says eventually. He sounds like he's half forgotten the sound of his own voice. I just wanted a chance to make them see I'm not a child anymore.
Who? Beaver asks, and piles the sand higher.
Everyone.
It isn't right for Keeley to sound so glum. Not Keeley, who woke them all with songs of his own devising for years when he was little, and who was known to laugh in his sleep on a regular basis.
Thorne doesn't trust us, and even Feely acts like he needs to be looked after all the time.
Beaver glances over in time to see his dark eyes go wide and frightened.
Do you think that's why he's doing this? Is he tired of watching out for me? Maybe he wants to be traveling alone now. Maybe he's planning to join Thorne and leave me here. Maybe...
Beaver reaches over and puts a finger to his lips, stopping the torrent of words, and Keeley scrubs at his lips with the back of a hand, grimacing as he wipes away sand. Stop, he signs. Mind too busy. He shoves a foot into the sand just in front of Keeley's hands, creating a deep furrow. Build. Keeley gives a weary little laugh and digs his fingers into the wet sand, letting it pile up randomly in front of him.
I'm 15. I'm not supposed to be building sandcastles.
Beaver shrugs, unconcerned, and lifts his face up into the warm breeze. They sit in silence for a few minutes, and Keeley begins to build something in earnest. The waves lap a little closer.
I wasn't trying to show off, no matter what he says,
Keeley says after a while, but he is calmer now.
It's just, I want to help. I want us all to be together again, and the only way to do that is to get the mountain back, and I was trying to help.
Dangerous? Beaver asks, and hopes it won't read as judgmental. The boy shrugs a little, dark hair whipping up wildly in the breeze.
I didn't think so. I wasn't expecting a knife, though.
His structure has taken shape, a strange configuration of raised dots and sunken lines that should form some sort of pattern, but are nothing but nonsense to Beaver's eyes. He gestures at it curiously, and Keeley huffs a laugh. Made a constellation. That's all I could think of. It's Gemini. The twins. Long fingers, nails bitten stubby, point out the shapes that might just be two stick figures, and Beaver nods. An unusually large wave crashes in, and Beaver's mountain overbalances as one side is swept away. It crumbles down into a shapeless heap, and he shakes his head in quiet amusement. Keeley gives a shout, leaping forward to protect his constellation with his hands. But it's too late. The figures have been overrun, and Keeley watches disconsolately as the sand slips between his fingers with the retreating wave, leaving a muddled mess behind.
It's not going to happen, is it?
Keeley asks quietly after a minute. He sits back. The whole family together, the way I always imagined it. That's not the way any of this ends. Beaver drops a hand on his hat, warm from the sun, and ruffles his hair. He leaves sand behind. He moves his hands away to sign. You're growing up. Keeley nods, but there's no triumph in it. He lets the next wave take his work away, and trails his fingers through the water as it goes. It is the water that brings it to an end. A hot day comes, and Keeley follows Beaver to the beach. It's not long before he throws off his shirt and shoes and wades out into the cool water, laughing as waves strike his chest, his face, leave his hair hanging heavy and wet on his shoulders. Beaver feels a knot in his chest loosen a bit at the sight, as the little boy he has loved breaks free of the man he is becoming, and Keeley plunges beneath the water to swim.
Uncle?
Feely's voice, easy and unconcerned, floats up the path. He waits for the boy. Beaver has become patient.
They sent me to tell you—
He breaks off as he comes over the crest of the hill, finding Beaver sitting in the sun.
Beaufort squints up at him against the sun, and beckons for him to come and sit. Feely obeys, crashing to the sand with easy grace, and lets his shoulder knock against Beaufort's. "Water's good," Beaufort signs, and gestures out to sea. Feely shakes his hat, made lazy by the sun.
"No, they sent me to tell you there's a riptide today. We're not supposed to swim."
Keeley's head pops up above the water, and he gives an exuberant shout as he holds something aloft. He's always loved picking up unusual things. Feely goes still in an instant.
"He's swimming? He's going to drown!"
Keeley doesn't look a bit like he's drowning, but Beaufort can hear the breath catching raggedly in Feely's throat for a long, frozen moment, and then he is gone, long legs bearing him across the sand and into the water without a pause. He's out to Keeley in just a moment, pulling him back toward shore, and they're shouting at one another even as their feet reach the rocky bottom, moving back to safety as they fight.
"I was fine!"
Keeley howls, sending a wave of salty water at his brother.
"I don't need you to come in rushing to save me!" "Of course you did!"
Feely snaps, returning the childish gesture.
"You always do, and I always come! I can do things on my own! I'm not a child!"
Keeley shoves at his brother spitefully, but without much force.
"You don't need to bother yourself with looking after me. You can go and do whatever it is you'd rather be doing." "No!"
Feely shakes his head wildly, sending sparkling drops of water flying.
"I don't want to have to do things without you, idiot! I don't know how, and I don't intend to learn."
He grabs his brother's arm tightly, the uninjured arm, Beaufort notices, and hauls them both toward shore.
"So you're not allowed to do stupid, dangerous things without me. You can't! I'll have them keep you locked up here if I have to, even if we'd both hate it!"
Keeley digs his heels in and yanks his arm away, staring at his brother in confusion.
"I thought you were angry at me!" "I am!"
Feely growls.
"Do you even know what it was like for me? I can't even look at you without feeling like I'm going to break something apart. You almost died!" "I wouldn't have died!"
Keeley objects flippantly. "Everyone dies. Mom did." It's flatly stated, and it stops both of them in their tracks. They stand staring at one another for a long, silent moment that is somehow the least awkward interaction Beaufort has seen from them in a fortnight. "I won't," Keeley murmurs, a solemn declaration. He puts out his hand to his brother.
"I won't die. And you won't leave me again. All right?"
If the answer is anything but a wordless shout that turns into a tackle, and then an epic battle of flying water and shouts of laughter in the shallows of the beach, Beaufort doesn't hear it. He stands, scuffing out the mountain he had shaped with one foot, and walks away quietly. Some things, Beaufort knows, don't require words.
So we build our tower constructions there to mark our place in time. We justify our great destructions as on we climb. Now the journey doesn't seem to matter. Destinations faded out and gathering out along the headland. I hear the children shout. I feel so near to the howling of the winds. I feel so near to the crashing of the waves. I feel so near flowers in the fields. Feel so near. Feel so
the howling of the winds. I feel so near to the crashing of the waves. I feel so near to the flowers in the fields. I feel so near to the howling of the winds. I feel so near to the crashing of the waves.